Shep and Maniacs. You are listening to another episode of the Shep Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I am Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing darn good. You know, for the world's reopening party. Well, not the world, I should say. The world's in very different places there, but our little town is a little hyper excited about having some things open again.
I think hyper anxious would describe my current point of view, but hey, that's fine. We'll get through it. Hopefully.
Well, speaking of where you are in the world, we're going to do a little rapid fire here, you know, and the first question happens to be the fact about how you can ask a browser where you are in the world.
Oh,
did you know that?
I've used it before, so I have a little experience in this domain, but let's, Shane O'Sullivan writes in, "Hey, homies, thank you. I got used to navigator.geolocation. I got to use navigator.geolocation for the first time today, and it made me wonder, is there any way to control the text in the prompt the browser displays when asking the user to grant permission? It would be very nice to let the user know why we want to know where they are, sort of like native apps do." Ah, so maybe you're familiar, Chris. Have you ever messed with geolocation?
Only in the, you know, in the days of I don't know what I mean by days, but you know, when it first started coming on the scene, I think it was pointed to as a really cool thing for progressive enhancement, because you can, it's like this API that, what could you do if you had it? And everybody was coding around that, you know, like, let's code up a form that asks people where they live, and then we'll show them the Home Depot that's nearest them. But you could enhance it by using navigator.geolocation or the geolocation API to just say, hey, can you just like let me look quick and I'll tell you where you are in the world, and then we'll show you the Home Depot without you having to type in a single word there. And so in order for that to work, though, there needs to be some level of trust. And for people that don't want their browser or the person, you know, in the companies and URLs and IP addresses that browser is talking to be able to have that information, which is very legit, the browser can't just cough up that information without asking you if it's okay. So there's an if it's okay prompt that comes up, and I believe that's what Shane is asking about, like, can you control what that is this okay prompt says? And I don't know the answer, but I would bet you $50 easily that you can't.
Yeah, I don't think you can. And I mean, you can see the like security vector here is very like, you know, like it has to be the browser's text, like the very predictable, because otherwise it would be like, hey, do you like cool stuff? And you're like, yeah,
click yes,
click yeah, yes. Or are you a bad person? No, I'm not. Oh, okay, great, cool. I have your private personal geolocation information in my stalker computer. I mean, like, that's like...
The middle ground would be like, you could add some prompt and the browser would show its default text too, you know, it would be like bonus text or something. But, right. You know, to some degree, it's like, why, you know... You can give developers things they can screw up. I mean, you can screw up anything in programming. So what's the difference here? Well, the difference here is it would only be abused. There's like,
oh, only. I mean, people make fake notification dropdowns. You know, it's this, and that's the same permission system. You know, it's like, hey, yeah, you want to get cool updates, my guy? And you're like, yeah, I like cool updates. And it's like, cool, I'm going to bother you every 22 seconds with a new Business Insider article. So,
yeah, I think the best you can do here is the design of the site itself. Be like, hey, the site's about to pop up a thing that asks you for permission. And we're doing that because we're Home Depot and we want to help you find our stores. So if you want extra help there, click OK. Just know that you're sharing your location with us and that we don't do anything with that data. We don't store it or anything, yeah. You know, it's got to be baked into the copy and the UX of the website. But the actual control that the browser pops up, like I said, I can't guarantee this. I'm not looking at the API docs right now, but no way are they letting you change that. So
yeah, I mean, it would be cool if like there was like a prompts API or something, you know, maybe that's something the browsers could do one day where you could like add, like chuck in additional text, you know, but even that, it's just, you know, it's like, are people really going to be like, we're going to store your location data forever every time you log into the website? Like, no one's going to offer that little factoid, you know? So it's just, it's a vector for whatever social engineering or just straight up lying your way into stealing people's data. They did make, it used to be you could use geolocation without GPS. Same with the gyroscope and stuff like that. Like, now you have to ask permission for all that stuff. So like, you don't just get it. Mm. You used to have gyroscope access, but then, you know, advertisers.
I'd say I'm 50-50 on websites when they ask for stuff. If it's notification related, it's an auto no. I know you're on Windows now, Dave, but the latest update of Mac OS is really strict about notifications. Mm-hmm, and it was Catalina, it's so satisfying to update because all these apps were like, can we show you stuff? Can we show you stuff? Can we show you stuff? And I was like, no, 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 no. And now, months later after that upgrade, I'm just a happier person.
Yeah.
You know,
living
forget
life.
Forget your updates. I do not want them.
Not getting same growled at. Yeah. I do not want your notifications. Same I am. I would not eat them in a can. I have quite, I guess my mail app just like notifies me. It's just getting mad at me. But notifications are so distracting. I took them off my phone. I mean, every app I'm like, no, even geolocation, I'll just say no. Like, I'm looking, like checking inventory at the local Best Buy or Target or whatever. It's like, no, you don't need to know my house. I don't know. I don't trust. I like Target. I like Best Buy, but I'm not going to give you my house. Like, I'll give you my zip code. I feel okay. Like, it's okay if you know a customer's in your zip code, but you don't need to know my exact house. I don't need that. I ain't got that.
That would be the only time I would. And even then it's 50-50. Only, it just depends on if I'm feeling just like extraordinarily lazy and click that button.
It's like, I'll give it to Uber or Lyft, like my exact location, which is like kind of just to use the thing or Google Maps. But then it's like, then they do stuff with you. They're going to do stuff with your data. I tell you what,
I know that's the thing. It's like the chances of Home Depot doing something nefarious with your location data. You know, I'm not very tinfoil hatty about that. It's probably pretty low, you know, like whatever. They like just
10 penny
get
nails
you to
are
Depot.
Very popular on this block. We ran the data and this block is very into.
But at the same time, their security team isn't probably like, you know, super world class either. You know, sorry, maybe it is Home Depot, but I doubt it. Sorry. You know, your core business is selling home stuff, not web security, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the incentives are to sell you more things. You know what I mean? Like that's you got to look at that stuff, like that they care more about selling you more things than they do protecting your personal privacy, unfortunately. But
isn't that wild? You do got to follow the money there and see the incentives. That's why it's sometimes, you know, it's interesting to look at Apple, and I'm sure they've screwed up on plenty of stuff, but it's easier to see why they are actually incentivized to make things secure and to protect your data, because they're just not in the advertising business. They're not in, they sell no personal data. They're just not in that business. So it actually behooves them to lock that stuff down more. That's nice to know. It's kind of cool. All right. Well,
hopefully that helps, Shane. I agree. It would be cool to like customize it. Be like, we're trying to like give you relevant data or something like whatever.
There'd be a chance to beg. Show me.
Yeah. I mean, think about Craigslist. It's like, you go to Craigslist and it's like in Austin or whatever. And you're like, yeah, but like which hour away part of Austin are you talking about? You know, like, and so like, it would be cool to like sort by distance or something like that. So there's cool features.
Craigslist just knows somehow. It must be IP related. Oh yeah, day trip.
Yeah. There. Yeah, we use it in day trip to like get like the actual like distance away. And actually we do a little math because you can lazy like you can do the exact location like Google Maps, like, but that's an expensive bunch of API calls to go like up one street, over one street, up one street, over one street, like get the exact distance. And then if you go as the crow flies, like just a diagonal line, that's going to be way too short. So there's like, I read some papers and like, you can kind of like, depending on how rural or whatever, it's usually like distance times 1.4 or 1.8 or whatever, just kind of ballpark the actual distance. So anyway, that's, so anyway, that, but so you can use that. You can, like you're, I think you mentioned IP addresses. You can use these IP address services to kind of ballpark where they are. I know Best Buy does that to me and they think I'm in like South Austin, which is fine. I don't mind if they think I'm in the wrong place, but I do have to reset my store every time. So like you have these, you know, like you have these trade-offs, but you can, you know, ballpark with like an IP block.
The IP being is that then, you don't have to ask anything. You just can do it.
You don't, you know? Yeah. It's, public,
you know, it gets creepy. Once in a while I'll go to some website and there'll be one of those like things in the bottom right corner. I don't know, what are we calling those, like reverse growlers or gravity growlers,
toasts, aren't they? Okay. Aren't they the toasts?
I think of toasts as the upper right, but I guess you can position them anywhere you want, you know. But like a, like, do you want to chat, or like, hey, can we help you? In there must be some double IP plus intelligence, because I'll go to one once in a while and I'll be like, hey, Craft CMS, how you doing? Good to see you again. I'll be like, because they must know that for a while we had the same IP address when we shared at office. And then, so they match IP to business name too. And I'm like, I didn't type nothing into this website. And you're guessing that I'm Craft? That's...
I've worked with a company that leveraged those services before. It's, I mean, they did not make the service, they leveraged it, but yeah, that those services exist. They'll like, you know, it's like they'll, you know, and that, yeah, it you can abstract where it goes from there. But like, if you're like, every time Chris visits the website, they're like, ooh, another Craft CMSer just visited. Ooh, hoo, hoo, hoo. Guess we're getting close to sales. So it's gotta be careful out there. There's it's enough to get you a VPN. I mean, just right there, you're just like, I'm using a VPN. I
hate Do you this. VPN?
No. Occasionally clients will have some. That's funny too. I had a client based in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so all my YouTube ads are for Louisville. like I get like Louisville politicians, like, and I'm just like, this is, couldn't be more off, but they think I'm pretty Kentucky. Yeah. And I think the even my Twitter trending topics are like all skewed to Louisvillians or Kentuckians, political perspectives.
Like town.
It's just, it's a good town. Nice little town. Good whiskey, decent barbecue.
I have one, but only because we do one at work, you know, like we just need to for various reasons and stuff. But it doesn't send all internet traffic through it. It just sends our work stuff through it, you know. But yeah, we could configure that. We just didn't, you know, I don't know. I haven't been compelled to use a VPN for all things just yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it depends. It's different security, different ways. So.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by WooCommerce. WooCommerce is it's a plugin for WordPress that brings all the e-commerce abilities to WordPress. It's free and open source, which is pretty cool. So you can, you know, that makes it super popular, probably the most popular way to sell things online in the world. I use it. I think it's awesome. But there's, you know, there's the ability to sell things on a website. And then there's like, okay, now I've done that. Now I need to do marketing. Now I need to get people to this site. I need to do all the responsible stuff to like keep the juices flowing in a store like this. Marketing is a big deal. So, you know, this is a fairly new landing page for them that's super useful. WooCommerce.com/marketing. Nice URL, huh? Go there and look at the kinds of things you can do with WooCommerce with marketing. For one thing, you can do like coupons. Coupons is a part of marketing. Coupons draw people to the store. People are obsessed with coupons. You know that. It's just built into WooCommerce. So you can learn about using coupons, setting them up, and getting them working. That's nothing. That's still free. The way that WooCommerce is a business is that some of the add-ons for WooCommerce are paid. So for example, let's say you want to have free gifts. You know, you want to offer free gifts to your customers for making purchases in the shop. You know, that's a plugin that you can buy for WooCommerce. It's $49 and it's, you know, it's offered right through WooCommerce. So that's, you know, that's how WooCommerce works, right? There's certain functionality that's above and beyond the already robust functionality of WooCommerce that you pay for, you know? So the gift plugin is one of those, you know, if you want to take money with Stripe, that's a free plugin, you know, but there might be other payment related things that are up and over. You want to have a point system, like give points to your customers for their purchases and they can spend those points. That's a plugin. That happens to be a paid one that you can buy. You know, all this is part of marketing. Email is a massive part of marketing. There's all sorts of email tools that go above and beyond what WooCommerce already does with emails. You know, get it all hooked up to MailChimp. Do something like recovering abandoned carts. That's a huge one for e-commerce, right? That people put some stuff in the cart and they got cold feet or they got distracted or they forgot or whatever. Let them know. Be like, hey, you put this stuff in your cart, but you didn't check out. Just let them know. It's the type of thing that is super effective because people don't generally mind. They'd be like, oh yeah, I did do that. Or they can be like, yeah, I know, I left you archive email, you know, no big deal. But okay, so WooCommerce marketing, it's a thing. Awesome. Check it out. Code Rufkins writes in it. He's wondering if we've ever forayed into Emacs. And if so, well, what was your experience like?
Well, Code, if this is your real name, you are in the right business. I've never used Emacs on purpose, and I've used Vim, I've used Nano, because like Vim didn't work in my Visual Studio Code, like it doesn't work that well in there, so I just use Nano instead. Emacs, I think I've tried before, but it wasn't my thing, so yeah, I don't think I've really used it. So how about you?
Never Chris, once, never once have my keys touched a keyboard in which the Emacs was activated. So, you know, Vim, of course, because, you know, once in a while it comes up, you know, you're SSH'd into something or whatever, you know, and I get that was the original heart of Vim. And then I know some people that picked it because of that, because they spend so much time SSHing into servers and doing things that like having the rest of the code that they edit in their life also be in Vim felt natural to them. And they're like, you know, why learn two things when I'm already comfortable that way. But then I get the spirit that the real Vim lovers out there love it because of how powerful it is, how like there's these two different modes, the insert and not insert. And you just, you know, there's just a zillion key commands for shuffling text around and stuff. And so once in a while, I'll see somebody that's very good at Vim and singing the praises of Vim and be like, that's neat. You know, we all of us do so much typing and the manipulation of code that it feels like the fundamentals, you know, it feels like you're practicing your dribbling or whatever. You know, we're all watching The Last Dance, right? It's so good. Have you seen it?
Oh. No, but I've heard about it. I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, you know, like, and then I get over it. And then I know. So I don't use Vim either, you know, sorry. But super Vim lovers out there, I know there's a lot of you, but it seems like Vim and Emacs were in the same category, right? A little bit. Like, I know that they have different approaches and stuff, but they're like, they're for deep text editing nerds. And I always felt pretty powerful anyway. And it doesn't feel like a limitation to me, how I write code.
Yeah, I think I think like knowing a command line based, I mean, in Emacs, should say, in Vim as well, with NeoVim, you can get like a downloadable executable app or exe, like that has a little bit of a GUI or whatever, like those things exist. But I think we're talking primarily command line usage. I think like knowing how to use one is a skill, because you're going to run into that and have to use it at some point. I mean, like you're saying, like your SSH in some box that's breaking or running out of memory and you have to restart it every 2 days or whatever. Like there's just things you have to do, like as part of our jobs, to like get into a server and do something. So I think that's like something you have to learn how to do. Or editing config files. I don't want to spin up, like, I can just edit a config file or like a bash RC or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think you need to know how to do that and have that as a skill. You know, I don't know why, you know, maybe there's good reasons on Emacs. I know it's quite a holy war, but I just don't know why I have decent feelings about Vim. I've never set it up though. I know like Andy Bell and lots of other people have, like a lot of people have, like,
isn't it work in VS Code? I mean, the fact that that is true, that's a whole another ball game then, right? Then you can bring your Vim to,
yeah, you can get key bindings over from VS Code to match the Vim bindings and stuff like that. You know, I think people who have their dot files all set up and just like have fully tweaked out their Vim setups, like, I think that's very inspiring. I wish I had that, but I just don't. I don't want to spend time. People would probably laugh at me for like even my VS Code setup, because it's so basic. It's I install plugins I need, but I'm not the artisanal VS coder. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not writing my own.
I wanted to be for a minute. I signed up for some newsletter that was supposed to teach you how to, you know, get a little zen with your VS Code. And the first couple of ones were really about ripping everything down. Like, yeah. No, you know, just very few sidebars and headers and footers and UI and anything. And the end result looked neat as a screenshot. And then as I started to do it, the vibe of it was like, well, you know, we're ripping this UI down. So now if you want to use any of what that UI offered, we have to set up some, bespoke key commands to bring it back. And I was like, oh, I'm worried about my muscle memory there. I'm worried that, and then I switched to some other computer and those aren't there and whatever. I'm like, sometimes it's nice to like run a stock machine, you know, as they say, like try not to get too fancy. 'Cause that way, you know, you need to pop to some other machine or whatever, and or things change in your life. It doesn't become a massive pain in the butt otherwise. And I feel the same here. So I'm different than you. I think I probably have a good amount of plugins. Once in a while, I'm compelled to be like, what are people using? I want rainbow brackets, you know, and I get the rainbow brackets going. But other than that, I draw the line at too extreme of modifications.
And probably my Achilles heel, and this is just, I'm just really discrediting the Shop Talk Show here, is between machines, no consistency. I'll have some plugins over here, some different theme over here. Like, it's just, it's a wasteland, dude. And it's bad. And then even per project, like some projects will have like a proper editor config with two spaces or two tab spaces and, you know, like it's all, and it's like, I save it, auto formats. Other projects, nothing happens, dude. Just I can type all the garbage I want. And like, I have no like common thread, you know, and I'm trying to figure out the linting. I'm trying to self-enforce like better linting on all projects. You know, that's like something I have to do, but you know, that's time. It takes setup, you know, and every time you hop into one, you're like, I'm going to do it a little better this time. And then you spend 2 days and you're like, what did I do? I did nothing. And now I can't select text. So I don't know what I did, but that's where
the worst setup you can be is, I feel like anytime you change anything like that, you got to take the time to run all the same crap over your whole project and have it all fixed up, and then commit that and say, this is my whatever, my lintation fix, you know. And I know linting is a little different than like auto formatting kind of stuff, because linting's trying to tell you about problems and stuff.
Style lint, yes lint, prettier, it all to just on save, beautify, right? That's
yeah. But then if it's a little off, then you're the guy who's like opens up a file to change a typo and it changes the white space in the document because your setup's a little bespoke. That's like, that's to me, it's almost, it's like not okay, You know, like, I don't want to see your gnarly ass code commit. That's all, you know, and it depends on the kind of project you're on. Because I just did some commits to the Shop Talk Show website where that happened because I had activated some format PHP and HTML thing. Because I, the more you work in like JSX, which I work in a lot, the auto formatting of that HTML in there does great. It does a perfect job in Prettier. JSX is like a first class citizen of Prettier, you know? And then you move to something where your CSS is formatted, your JS is formatted, but your HTML isn't anymore because to be honest, for auto formatting HTML is just a harder problem, you know, because white space matters in weird ways in HTML that you don't know. You know what I mean, right? Like sometimes a space matters. LIs is a big one. I want it. So I install crappier plugins to do it. And it's, you know, like even my ERBs.
You go to Backshell, you're in the, you went behind the curtain. You're in the
and it's bit me now like three times, this PHP one, just terrible. You know, it'll like, it does, it didn't deal with like these tagged literal things the way I wanted it to. Like PHP has a version of template literals. Did you know that? It's called like, you have to use like three angle brackets in a row.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Three angle brackets in a row, and then you give it a name, and then you do, then you have to like say end, and then those three digits or whatever. But it's a way to just, you know, it's, you know, template literals are great, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than string concatenation, which is just the worst in PHP or JavaScript. But my ERBs aren't auto-formatted either in Rails, and it just annoys me after a while. But there just is no good solution out there. Like, please write in if you have a perfect auto formatting ERB situation. So this PHP one, it does okay-ish with the HTML, but then it has opinions about how your PHP should be formatted. And it's weird. It does the one where like the function name and then it opens the curly brace for the function on the next line. I hate that. That's like least favorite.
Uninstall. So, just immediate uninstall.
Yeah, there's no options. So that's that's kind of a goner. But it broke the template literals too. It like literally, my server is really funky with how it wants those formatted. And
man, there's so much here. I have so many stories. This is just a well of this is Dave Rupert's zone. Yesterday. So making a little Nuxt app at Paravel, just I all my deep links were dead. So you'd go to like whatever pages/1 and it just nothing shows up. And you're like, well, like certainly this works, right? Like Nuxt would not ship this broken or whatever, right? Right? Well, it turned out when you use the router, it passes the ID as an integer. Okay. And then but then when I was like, okay, now get all my posts or pages and then find where page ID equals params ID. And so when it was going through the router as an integer, because my page.id was an integer, it was like, yeah, thumbs up, I got it. But when you direct link to it, the params ID, because it was in a URL, was a string. And so then it, and then my linter was like, oh, we don't do double equals. We're sophisticated JavaScripters. We do triple equals in this house. And I said, okay, well, we do triple equals. That's broke my deep linking because now it was comparing an integer to a string.
And you didn't parse int it or whatever, because why would you?
Why would you? And so, but I just ended up doing .toString on both of them because that's the easiest thing. I did a bad to make the parser happen.
This is funny. Alex calls that acquiescing to the linter. Yeah. Acquiesce is the word there, where you like write code that you wouldn't otherwise just to like pacify this stupid linter, you know, like just get it to do what you want to. Even it bugs me to some degree though, right? Like that's not the code I would have wrote.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I talked to Eduardo from Vue and he said like it's fixed in Vue router 4 or whatever, it's always going to be a string because params are URLs are strings and params are string. But yeah, I that's a hard thing to test too. It's like go to this, you know, like to write a test for that, like it only works when you go straight to a URL, you know, like it didn't anyway. That blew my mind, but I fixed it. And now we have deep links in the app. And so it's like, great. And then the other day, I have so many stories. but that's like my most recent one. I'll stop there. But it's just getting things set up is just so tough. And you're right. There's no herb ERB linter that works. It just
definitely not PHP, the whole thing. HTML. Yeah. But there's Ruby ones. I mean, I run RuboCop on Ruby, and it's fine. It's a little slow, but it's fine. You know?
Is it written in Ruby? It's probably written in Ruby.
Yeah, probably. But it, it yells at you about good stuff. You know, I'd say that for the most part, it's like, oh, that actually is not how I should have written that. It's good at teaching you Ruby. But then once in a while, it's like that string is too long. And you're like, oh, I don't care.
Yeah.
Who cares? You know?
Yeah. Well, and so kind of bringing it back to this Emacs thing. I mean, we're griping about our editors or whatever and, you know, our plugins yelling at us, but I don't know if I could do like a command line only thing. Cause you know, I have a lot of weird plugins I use in my editor. I use a grammar one called WriteGood for blog posts. Like,
oh,
my
yeah?
grammar's terrible, but it's called WriteGood, and it's a linter. And so it'll give you like a green grammar squiggly when you're, and it's like, this is passive voice. You shouldn't use that. And so, yeah. Write good linter.
Look at that one.
Spell checks, you know, stuff like that. I use that all the time. And I don't know if I could easily get a similar environment in Vim. Maybe it's totally possible.
I wish that it was more native in VS Code. Like when you spelled something wrong, it would just have the regular squiggles like a text area would have on a browser or something. But it doesn't. And if you don't know that and don't have anything installed, you're really susceptible to copy typos. Mm-hmm. Which is a problem. So I have one that's okay, but the only indication is there's a little light bulb in the gutter, and you have to like know to click the light bulb to fix the typo or whatever, which I don't, that's what I mean by not native. I don't really like that. That'd be interesting to see what this WriteGood
linter, man. I like it. It's almost like a Grammarly in your text editor.
Yeah.
So, and it only works on Markdown files, or it only scopes to Markdown files. So that's kind of nice. One other thing I do, and this is a hack. You want to hear my cool hack? I'm not good at grammar, don't get me wrong, but I'll pull up my post, my draft in Edge, and Edge has this thing called read aloud. So you right click a word and read aloud, and it'll read your post back to you using, it's an AI, but like a voice. So like a robot voice or whatever, but it's a very humanized robot voice. So I'll have the browser read my post back to me, and that helps me catch these really bad misspellings, or kind of sometimes, not all the time, but it has me catch like pretty obvious, like hearing it spoken out loud catches pretty obvious
like
grammar
that.
Errors. So
I think I get worse over time and that stuff. I had a day where I really had to like almost sit down and breathe, because I was like what is wrong with, like I had like three like typos that weren't just typos, but like that impacted, that made me really look dumb and bad. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, yeah. I need to start like looking at my, what I freaking write before I hit return, you know?
I do. Yeah. I do push posts out and then tweet and then go through I'm just going to fix things process. So if you ever want the good version, don't click my article right when I post it. Wait about 20 minutes.
So, yeah, that's
cool.
That'd
be my advice. So.
So Edge, that's a cool feature of Edge. I like, you know, we're definitely in that mode where Microsoft needs to be evolving and doing stuff like that a lot. Otherwise the reasons to use Edge are gonna slip away. I mean, maybe not for you, but I think for a lot of us, it's like, I don't know why. I mean, it's just a slapper around Chrome. Why bother?
Yeah, you need to find the, you know, these browsers are going to have to differentiate, you know? I mean, it's, you know, I like this read aloud feature. It's like the killer feature for me. It has like a built-in reader mode. Hey, I'm not an Edge. This is an Edge commercial. But
no, but
built-in
look at
reader
the,
mode,
I just saw a
which not all browsers have. It has this collections feature I don't really use. And it has, what's my other favorite feature? I don't know. I forget. So it has a lot of
good there's features. A blog post just from the other day. Everything new from Microsoft Edge at Build. Build is happening now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Build's their big conference. And the blog post is blog posts like this aren't for one person, they're for lots of people. So maybe some people can read this blog post and be like, oh, holy crap, that's awesome. And I go through it and I'm like, I don't see anything in here that I care about.
So nothing, there's one feature in there. I know the post you're talking about. It's the switch profiles feature. Mm-hmm. You know how in Chrome or any browser kind of you have like your little head icon and you click it and you could be like log in as whatever my horny account and and now all your browsing is in your other account, right? Or it's your work account. It's your work account or your normal account usually, right? So what this has is so because it's Microsoft, it has a lot of Active Directory kind of like tuning. So if you have ever worked with a company where everything goes through Active Directory, like a lot of enterprise companies do, and a lot of my clients do, you can actually like switch to the profile to go to like the internal page that you need to see or your like internal whatever Atlassian uses Active Directory or can work with that. Office.
Can you do it per tab? That'd be kind of cool.
You can do it per tab, but what's neat about this switch profiles is it'll actually detect like, hey, looks like you're trying to sign in to this instance, but this other profile is the instance for that domain. So if I just type whatever Azure or something, like it'll be like, oh, do you want to use the like enterprise account that you have on, like, would you rather use that? So like pop prompts, up a little dialogue. Nice. And it's saving me like, 100 minutes a week. I mean, just from like, oh shoot, I gotta like switch profiles, open up a new thing, copy paste that URL or go back to the email program and click the link. And, you know, so it's saving me a lot of effort and stuff like that. So it's really cool if you have Active Directory. If you don't have Active Directory like needs, it may not be useful for you, but I know a lot of people do. A lot of people, their work or company or whatever has, you know, that all locked down. So you have to be all signed in for all that all the time. So anyway, it works really well.
What do you think the vibe is over there? You know, because it used to be its own engine, which needed a whole slew of employees to work on it. You know, now we're what, a year later, two after the announcement? Not two, but something.
Yeah.
And the vibe at the time was, oh, this is just only good. Nobody's losing their job. Everybody's just going to keep working on browsers. Edge is just only going to be better for it. And I guess it is, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. You know, aside from the browser diversity things, which we had probably too many shows on, what's the vibe now separated from this? Like, is market share up? Did no one lose their job? Is everyone just committing to the Chromium project and that's just happy? I mean, we can just ask, you know, get a guest on or something, but it's like, what's your vibe from the outside, you know?
I think we should get somebody to like just ask and get like the official point of view. I do know, like, when I watched some of that Build conference, and I do know that Edge has committed like an enormous amount of commits to the Chromium engine, like fixing old things and, you know, things that I guess
that's
were never
the best
prioritized
possible outcome here, I think.
I was going to try to find, because I feel like there's a blog post or something somewhere like that one you're referencing. It's like a enormous amount of commits. Like, I want to say like 300 or 3,000. I know those are very different numbers, but it was like, here, 3,000 commits have been made to Chromium since 2018. So like 3,000 commits landed in Chrome. That's like, you know, that's a lot. I mean, if you even just divide that by 2 years, that's dozens of commits.
And if a lot of them were things that Edge did well, and Chrome didn't, you know, that'd be kind of rad, you know, because that was the loss, is that Edge was the leader in some regards, and, you know, in a few things. And if those things could be brought over, then that's kind of great, you know.
And I think they're doing that. And then even Microsoft, just through Satya and stuff, has a big focus on accessibility. And so I think they're prioritizing that work pretty well. Like high contrast mode and things like that. And like those sort of specs and specifications are kind of being worked on. So that's the other trick too. You can't, it's not just, I think we learned with like all the, like, Brian Cardell and stuff like that. It's not just like, I have an idea, I'm going to put it in the browser. You gotta get a little bit of consensus to put stuff in the browser. So, and Jen Simmons would say the same thing.
We started the show with talking a little bit about the follow the money kind of thing. Where's the incentive? And I guess that's what I'm latching onto, is like, what is Microsoft's incentive anymore? Why do they even care about this?
I don't know that answer at all. I mean, I think from like an outside perspective, you know, they've always had a browser. You know, I think that's something.
Right. It'd be way too weird for them to not have one.
Wouldn't
that's
it?
That's not, I mean, even an option. Yeah.
Like, or like enterprise customers probably demand they have one or something, you know, like, like,
yeah.
Otherwise, you know,
it's the worst look in the world to be like, oh no, we don't even have a browser. You want to use a browser? Just use Google. Because there's some, you know, there's some pretty generally wide mistrust of Google. I would say there's some market share of Edge probably is just like the fact that it isn't Google.
Yeah, and I do know that they rip some Google-y pieces out, but you know, it's like Play Store and Google Talk or whatever APIs and stuff like that. But, yeah. You know, there's like, yeah, I'm not the person to talk to, but I'm just an Edge user. But, I think I'd be curious to see and talk to somebody and see what kind of the sitch is. So, see how things are moving forward there. So,
this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. You know AWS, right? Amazon Web Services. It powers most of the internet, it feels like. There's a ton of things that go in the AWS bucket, like EC2 allows you to like spin up servers of your choice and has all kinds of configuration. And like S3 is for file storage and Lambdas is for running cloud functions, all kinds of stuff that individually you can set up and use and are great. But there's so much more than that. You know, there's a ton of different things AWS does. AWS Amplify is kind of a package of tools to help you build full stack apps for the web. So it's like, I don't know, just give me the stuff that I need that usually you need to build an app. So Amplify is hosting. You need web hosting, it's got that. It's got authentication for logins for your users. It's got GraphQL as a first-class citizen of it. It's got serverless functions, like I need, you know, the Lambda thing. I want to run some code in the cloud to hit APIs and do whatever else I need to. And it's got file storage if you need it. It's got some machine learning stuff in there if you need it. So Amplify is this, you know, easy to use full stack framework for getting started quick with building web apps. Is really cool. The auth stuff alone is cool. It's just a few lines of code in there. GraphQL has taken over the world of how to get things from a database, put things back in a database, really front end development friendly way to do database stuff. Love GraphQL. It's just built in as a first class citizen. It's the scalable API. It just you don't have to provision your own servers. It just does it up for you. Pretty cool. So AWS Amplify is really cool. Definitely worth checking out, especially as a front-end developer. So check all that out.
Here we go. Craig England writes in, since there are many job descriptions asking for React, Vue, insert JS framework here as required skills, when do you think it's appropriate for someone to add one of these frameworks to their resume? For example, I recently finished a couple of React projects at my current job, working closely with different backend developers. However, I can't pluck up the courage to add React on my resume. Is having two projects under your belt enough, or is it better to describe my role on the project so that potential employers know what they mean when I say I know React, etc.?
I'd put all that crap on my resume. I've never even really used Vue. I'd put it on there.
If you've used Microsoft Word, you just put proficient in Word on the resume. It's just, it doesn't even matter, man. No,
you're trying to get the job or not, man. Like, who cares if you fail the interview? Fine, but don't rule yourself out at the resume level, you know?
Yeah, I mean, two projects is seems like a lot to me. I mean, like, I you know, somebody's had asked me if, like, you know, do you do React? And it's like, well, done one project. I mean, as long as you're transparent about it. I mean, if they kind of grill you on it, just be like, well, I've only done two. So it's, you know, I have a lot to learn, but there's, you know.
Well, what are you looking for? You're looking for somebody that knows the deep internals of React because you have this complicated project that runs around React all crazy style. Or do you just need, is it just happened to be the framework that you generally build stuff in at the job? And if that's the case, you barely even need to know it to begin with. I don't care about these frameworks. If something came along where I absolutely had to work in Angular or something, I would just figure it out. And so will you, Craig. It's not that hard.
I've worked in Angular. I don't use Angular. You know, I've worked on React projects. I don't really do React. You know, like,
yeah, look in the package.json, see what scripts are to run, find in project, find the stupid string you're looking for, follow the thing, read the manual, you know, whatever, put whatever you want.
Your thing look like another thing. So it's just, you know, it's not super rocket science, but I think you could put it there. One thing I read a blog post, I wish I could remember the source, but it was about the, like, how to do a technical resume, and maybe that's something you should look into. There's been some good posts on that. Oh man, I'm blanking. But it was, don't just say, like, I know React, you know, say, like, talk about your job, like what you did. Like, you said you did two projects or whatever, say, like, you know, whatever, implemented 27 views or whatever over 18 components or whatever. In React or whatever, however you want to describe that work, whatever you did, or like made a complete, like, multi whatever user authentication system, blah, blah, blah. Like say what you did kind of at a high level. You know, you can't really probably get specific on a resume, but find your bullet points, get your top three bullet points on what you did. Don't just say, like,
do you think that, why is that though? Do you think that it works? Because I get conceptually why you would do that, because it makes for just better reading. It's just more interesting. It's like, it's more honest. It's more, it just seems like the way to go, but seeming like the way to go and having it actually land you jobs can be at odds, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's like context, you know, it's like, I worked at Apple. Here's two truths and a lie about Dave Rupert. I worked at Apple and I worked at Microsoft. Like, those two things are different. But at Apple, I was a technical support, like Apple Care support caller. Like, you call in.
Is that
Apple.
True?
Oh, it's true. True as day in Austin, I didn't know Texas. That. Yeah. And like, so people called me about their broken iPods and I would help them try to figure it out. Usually we're like, no, you have to go buy a new iPod, but no. But then, you know, for Microsoft, like, redid their homepage in 2012, like two dramatically different things, you know, like, so don't just say you, like, worked somewhere or like you used React somewhere, like, say what you did there. Cause using those are two different things, you know, like, did you, you know, I worked on design systems. It's like, okay, what do you mean? Did you, like, pick colors, or did you build every component? Did you contribute back to component? Like, what role did you do in the design system? Like explain what you did. Don't just like super high level it or, you know, React's not a binary skill. Like, you know, if you do React, it doesn't mean, like, you're good at all the other, like, React and Friends work, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It just, but maybe you are. So, like, I think you have to describe the context in which you are experienced.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would like to read that. So let's just assume that works, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't care if you did two projects in React and that was on your resume, that is more than enough. And in fact, I'd just assume people are kind of lying about it because What does it even mean anyway?
Anymore? Yeah. I mean, like, isn't that the thing too? It's like, say you do it, and then if you get the interview, well, sign up for old Wes Boss's course and just binge crash, like just crash it until you feel like you don't look like a total idiot, like when you walk into the interview. I mean, if I ever had the interview and people are like, oh, do you know algorithms? It's like, oh yeah, man, I know algorithms, you know, big algo over here, you know? You know, and then I like just would basically just have to binge like whatever, some Khan Academy to figure out whatever a tree sort is, you know? It's silly. It's all smoke and mirrors, the whole industry, y'all. So there you go.
Do it, Craig. Let's see. Let's do this last one. This one is from Swix. I believe I pronounced it. I am always struggle with that, Mr. Swix. I know your name is Sean Wang, but you'd like of anybody on the internet that has a really like known internet special handle, it's you in my world. You know, everybody refers to you as that, but I don't know. I tend to, in my blogging, refer to people by their name, you know, it's rare that I have to do a handle thing anymore, but you're so into the handle that I don't know. Should I just say Swix in blog posts?
Like
I don't
Prince,
know.
Prince, and it's just transcends, yeah. The brand transcends the person.
I know. S-W-Y-X. Yeah. I've anecdotally noticed that most VPs of engineering and higher come from back-end engineering backgrounds. It's hard to get real numbers on that kind of thing, but it feels right. Do you think that there's a front-end ceiling, like many companies view back-end dev as a sufficient qualification to become a manager? That group includes front engineering, but not vice versa. I don't know. It seems rare to have like a VP of engineering be a total front end person. I don't know. That's a weird one, isn't it? And then is it also skewed towards like, you know, people with comp sci degrees and stuff too? They tend to be like schooled in that way as well.
Yeah, and they have extra letters next to their name, and that gets them the qualifications to be a CTO or a VP or whatever.
I hate to admit that I buy into it a little bit. I almost feel like if you're a really high level, you know, you're a CTO kind of person, that I almost want you to understand the back end stuff more, like the architecture of the heart of the thing. Whereas it's not that I undervalue front end. I think it's obviously mega important. It's absolutely the world that I live in. But if that's all you knew, I don't know that a CTO is right for you. You know, doesn't it? Ooh, I hate to say that.
This is a good question. We should get Sean on to talk about it on the show. But this is a good question. I think in companies, a lot of people associate the back end with the moneymaker. Oh, that's the moneymaking machine. That processes the credit cards. That, you know, that's the architecture. That's the infrastructure. That's the business. You know, people don't really see the front end as that, even though that's your portal. That's your door. That's the person who designed the shop, you know, or that's everyone's first experience is when they hit the website. I'm trying to think through like my head or just experiences I've had or whatever, where somebody was like very high up, came from a front end background, and I don't have a lot of examples in my brain. That could be age and bias. Does that make sense too? Like somebody who's a VP of engineering is probably, I'm going to just pretend, in their 40s, 50s or something. Does that seem fair? I mean, not necessarily.
Sure.
Let's say that. You know, so they probably, you know, where they cut their teeth in their 20s, 20, 30 years ago, the majority of the work was back end, you know, like there wasn't a lot of focus on the front end, even since we started this podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So timeline wise, That makes sense.
Yeah. Like even like, if you look at our podcast, if you go back to the beginning episodes, we're like, hey, is front end even a thing, Chris? You know, like, so front end is still a relatively new term. I mean, it was something we were still kind of inventing, you know, even 8 years ago. So I
get it. So the older people that have time to climb the ladder and get to those roles just came from an era in which that back end was bigger. But aside from that, like, let's say we rule that out as a qualification. Do you want a VP engineering that you go be like, hey, the server's down? I'll be like, well, I don't know. What's a server, you know? Or like, I don't do that.
Oh,
you don't want that. Do you want that? Or can there be a VP of servers and a VP of front end too?
I think there probably should be.
Like that. It's that you can still have a high level role.
Cause I think there's a lot of like VP of product or something like that, but usually that person has like a business background or something. You know, but what if there was like VP of user experience or client UX. Experience or something?
Yeah.
UX. I mean, and that could kind of transcend any app. I mean, I would assume some skills are transferable to like the iPad app or the iOS or Android app. But I don't think there has to be, but I think there maybe is maybe how I want to answer this question. If there's a front end ceiling.
Yeah, there may be though.
There maybe is right now. Cause I think they're just, because I think it's not very mature yet and we don't have a big, you know, I think front end still exists under the engineering and people, the dominant thought of engineering is that it's all back end, full stack.
I want to ask more guests this question too. The front end ceiling. I front love it. This ceiling. Could be a whole series, you know?
All right.
Not in, you know, certainly not in like entrepreneurialism. I think there's a lot of like startups where the startup happened because somebody involved was highly skilled in front end, and because front end is so powerful lately, we're seeing that more and more, that like businesses get spun up because of highly talented front enders.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of even, you know, those highly talented front enders might even fall under like a design umbrella, you know, which is kind of
sure
different, but you know, there's all the kind of design led companies and things like that. So it could kind of work in that favor, but specifically like VPs of engineering. Yeah. I think it's part survivorship bias, just like the year which that person started coding, you know? But I'd be curious to see when it would change.
I wonder if it doesn't even skew. I wonder if it's 100% skewed. I wonder if there's any VPs of engineering out there that, I mean, are just
going to be
HTML like Dave and CSS Rupert people
is the VP of engineering at Faravel, but I have backend experience, so I don't know. Yeah. What does that make me?
Yeah, you do. So you're ruled out. You're already, that's what we need. Well-rounded people anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
We should power it down. Man, it's good to just talk here. Thanks y'all for listening. We've had just a great slew of guests. Been a lot of fun. I encourage you, this is like the first episode you've tuned into for a while because you don't like the guest episodes, go back and listen to those because they're great. We've had, you know, like Vitaly and Jerry McGovern and all kinds of people come on and share their knowledge with us, and it's been really wonderful. So tune in, check those out. Thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher. Starheart it. That's how people find out about this show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Tens of tweets. That's all there is. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, you got anything else you like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.